appreciate the prayer that Greg Lee always does a good job, and Jacob did a good job as always on leading our singing. You did a great job in blending your voices together. New Year. Here we are at the beginning of a new quarter, a new study. On Wednesdays, we're going to be studying, as we began last week, on some material in which you can study with individuals when you get a home Bible study with them. There's several different things that you can study with. Began one last week on some material asking the question, who then can be saved? We got almost all the way through that, so we'll continue that unless one of the other brethren want Wednesday night. We'll continue that this Wednesday, and we'll look at some other material when we get finished with that one. I thought it'd be a good study. I can't remember how long ago it's been. I don't think it's been too far back that Greg did a study on harmony of the Gospels and did a good job with that class. And we recently studied the book of Galatians. We studied the book of James. We studied the book of Hebrews. And we studied a number of the other books that the brethren have presented. And so I thought it'd be good for us to take a look at the book of Acts. I know I've told you over and over that along the way that we have been studying the book of Acts in our TV and radio program. And actually, this week makes a year that that study has been going on. And so I assure you that there is much that can be gleaned from a study of the book of Acts. And so we just finished lesson 52, and we're in chapter 14 in that study. And so this study, as we begin today, may not take nearly as long, or it may depend. I'm completely fine to just keep going with it and depend on how much detail you want from the book of Acts. But I assure you that there's no shortage of things to study when it comes to the book of Acts. A book that is 28 chapters. And a book that is important for us for a number of reasons to study and really wrap our minds around. I realize it's a big book. And I realize that many times with those who have been in the church for a good number of years, they may think, well, we know the book of Acts. We've studied the book of Acts along the way. And I can't recall since I've been with you if we've had a study completely on the book of Acts or not. I'm not sure. I know that I've not went through the book of Acts with you. But even if it is that we feel like that we've studied the book of Acts, and I've got a pretty good handle on the book of Acts, we need to be reminded about the things contained in the book of Acts. It's a very important book, and one that we don't need to take lightly and just think, well, we studied that years ago, and there's really no need to go back through it. One of the things that we've got to keep our eye on, I know that I do, and it's a challenge for me as a preacher, is just how far time has gone in between things that we take for granted that everyone knows. I try to make a list every year of the sermons that I teach and the Bible classes that I do just for myself. And you think, well, we've studied about the church. But then you get to looking and maybe it was a couple of years or a year and a half or a year since we really talked about lessons on. It's not been the case. I'm just using that for an example because CL's talked about the church recently. But you get the point that we need to continually be reminded about those things. We have new converts. We have children that are getting older and can't remember those classes that they've had. And now they're in the adult class and need to listen to many of the lessons that as older ones we take for granted that all of us should know. So we're going to study the book of Acts. And I hope that you'll take good notes. I hope that you'll think about the things that we're going to study about. I hope that you will ask questions. If you have questions, if I don't know, I'll just say, I don't know. And we'll study until we come up with a Bible answer. I want to give you 8 reasons as why we should study the book of Acts. There's a lot more, I'm sure, that you could add to this list. And if you want to add some as we go through here, you feel free to do so. I want to give you some reasons why we should study and know the material in the book of Acts. Number one, it's part of the inspired book of God. No book of the Bible from Genesis to Revelation should be overlooked. And many times it is because we think, it's a one chapter book and there's not much I can learn from it, so I'm going to study another book. And so we don't study books like Jude and other books, Philemon, and the other one chapter books in the Bible. It makes a good sermon, good study, one chapter books of the Bible, and do lessons from those. Sometimes we might get to a difficult book, and we may say, I'm going to skip over that. And then we miss out on the value of what that book has to do. We understand we're not under the Old Testament law of Moses, but then we get to the book of Revelation, and we decide we're going to observe a 21st century Passover and skip the book. We ought not do that because we miss the important things that we could learn from that book. The book of Acts is like any other book of the Bible. It is inspired. Genesis to Revelation, inspired of God. That means it came forth from God. We ought to study it and to know it. Another reason is it records, among so many other things, the establishment of the Lord's church, where it all began. In the book of Acts, chapter 2, the church prophesied so many times in the Old Testament, the New Testament, so many writers and speakers in the Bible pointed to the establishment of the Lord's church, but then in the book of Acts, we have the beginning, the establishment of the church of Christ, and we ought to be grateful for that, that we have the divine record. And we can know that the church of which we are a member of is rooted in the Bible. It records specific conversion accounts. And I know we've talked about these along the way, but we'll observe those as we go through the book of Acts. There's multitudes of people obeying the gospel, but then just a handful of specific conversion accounts that we have. And I challenge you, as I have in the past, I challenge you now, to commit to your memory every example of conversion in the book of Acts. When you study with folks, you'll need them. I guarantee you will need to know those conversion accounts. Write in the margin of your Bible, highlight it, write it in whatever book it is you write things down in, and commit it to your memory to know those conversion accounts. It records the spread of the gospel. If I were to ask you, when was the first gospel sermon? What's the answer to that? Acts chapter 2. Good. And so Peter, the apostles, spoke, they preached. Peter's sermon is recorded. And then after that, the gospel was spread. And the Lord had told them to go forth and to preach. You're familiar with that. Matthew 28 and Mark 16 and Acts chapter 1. And in the order in which the Lord said that they would be witnesses of Him is the precise order in which it took place. And so we have that recorded for us in the book of Acts. We'd miss out on that if we didn't know and study the book of Acts. I'll tell you, by the way, that most religious people that you study with will not be familiar with the majority of what you can point out in the book of Acts. Well, they've heard things from the book of Acts along the way, but they're not going to be familiar with specific examples of conversion, or they'll misapply to whatever the case may be. So it records the spread of the gospel. It records persecution against God's people, beginning in Acts chapter 3 and on through to Acts chapter 28. Acts chapter 3, Peter and John go up to the temple. They're persecuted. They're in prison. They're beaten. The apostles were. Stephen's put to death. James is put to death. And persecution against Paul. And when the book closes, Paul is in prison in Rome. So it records for us persecution against God's people. It records their reaction to persecution. I'm impressed every time I go through the book of Acts and other places in the Bible. They were not quitters. They weren't weak. I'm not saying that they didn't have temptations. I'm not saying that they weren't just as human as we are. That they weren't just as much in the flesh as we are. We know that they was. But they were not quitters. And we'll see that as we go through the book of Acts. It records the growth of the kingdom. Gospel was being spread, and even though they were being persecuted, the church was just growing and growing and growing. And then number 8, and here's one that I think so many times we overlook when it comes to the book of Acts. If there was one that was near the top of the list, yet I place it at the bottom, but not in significance, it would probably be this one. And for the very reason of which we've done the TV and the radio program on it, is because it answers doctrinal error that's taught today. When you think about how much doctrinal error is propagated in the world today, and then how much of it is directly rebutted, refuted in the book of Acts, underestimate that. You think about the many things, and you'll see that as we go through the book of Acts. I assure you, the many doctrines that are taught in the religious world, which are not true, that are refuted with the book of Acts. And we know plenty of other books as well, but I tell you, in 28 chapters, the amount of doctrinal, religious error, false teaching, that is directly refuted with this book is not overestimated. Just can't say it enough. And so there's 8 reasons as to why I study the book of Acts. Anyone else want to share a reason as to why it's an important book for us to get a handle on? That's 8 reasons. I'm sure there's others. And if it comes to your mind later on, then you feel free to say on. Today's really just gone. We're going to really only have time probably for just an introduction to the book. We'll go through an outline, a couple of outlines of the book of Acts, and then if we have time, we'll start with chapter 1, verse 1. If not, we'll pick that up in our next class. Someone may think, well, preacher, how on earth? You just must be long-winded for long-winded sake to do 52 lessons on half the book of Acts. No, I don't think I'm being long-winded about that. Our program's only 30 minutes, and so there's only so much you can do, but I just assure you that there are things that we need to be familiar with. And we're not going to be long for the sake of being long. And if the brethren decide, hey, look, one quarter is enough of that, and someone else can, that's fine. We'll come back to the book of Acts until we get through it. I want to give you a brief outline of the book of Acts. I shared with you as we went through the book of James, and we used the book of James not only to learn the contents of James, but also to learn a good way in which to study and approach a study of the book, any book of the Bible. I encourage you to do your own outline of any book of the Bible that you do. There are a number of outline books that you could pick up. And that's fine, and many of your Bibles have outlines as you go through particular books of the Bible. I think one of the best study Bibles is the Thompson Chain Reference Bible. I love that Bible. And the many helps that are in it has a whole section on an outline of every book of the Bible. But we will grow the most when we do our own. When we will sit down with the book of the Bible and we read it and we outline it for ourselves. Because then you're not relying on someone else's. You are putting together the outline based upon what you know concerning the book. A brief outline that I want to give is just 2 points for 28 chapters. You can write it down or do with it as you'd like. Number 1, the work of Peter in chapters 1 through 13. Chapters 1 through 13. Primarily chapters 1 through 13, though it's filled with so much vital information, really surrounds the work of Peter if you were looking at it in general. And then number 2, in chapters 13 through 28, the work of who? Paul. Work of the Apostle Paul. His conversion, and after he was converted in Acts chapter 9, he and Barnabas and others went forth, beginning Acts chapter 13 on what many times referred to as missionary journeys. I'll give you a little expanded outline, and again, you can take these, you could just, on an expanded outline, you could just expand it until your heart's content and write, separate it into every event that you would like to do so. But I'm only going to give you this expanded one that's going to cover the 28 chapters in 17 points. So take the notes or you can get them from me later. Point 1, the Lord's last conversation with the apostles and his ascension to heaven, recorded in chapter 1, the first 14 verses. And then the second event in Acts chapter 1, from 15 to the end of the chapter, in Acts 1, 15 through 26, is selection of the apostles to take Judas' place. I know that may be quick, but shake or nod, would you like to have a copy of that outline for our next class? If you do, I'll plug in an outline form and hand it out to you. Then I'll do it. More than happy to. Number 3. The day of Pentecost and significant events, which is entire chapter 2. And I've divided it this way into four points. The baptism of the Holy Spirit, how many lessons could you do on that? In Acts chapter 2, verses 1 through 13. The first gospel sermon, Acts 2, 14 through 36. The response of those in the midst, verses 37 through 38. The first mention of the church is present in Acts 2 and in verse 47. That should be Acts 2, 37 through 46 on that response of the people. And then, of course, you have Peter's response to their question. And then their response to Peter's response to their initial response. And we'll look at it. We'll look at that. Number 4 covers chapters 3 through 5, the persecution of the apostles. Someone says, well, preacher, there are so many other things you can learn within those chapters. You're exactly right. I agree with you. But it's just a general outline. The persecution and the death of Stephen in chapter 6 and 7. It begins as discourse in chapter 6 and is put to death in chapter 7. The persecution of the church. Chapter 8, verses 1 through 4. The work of Philip at Samaria in Acts 8, 5 through Acts 8 and then verse 25. The conversion of the eunuch. We're going to hit those conversion accounts hard. We have to. As well as a lot of these other events. And I'll give you some handouts along the way if you'd like to have those that go along with it. Acts 8, 26 through 40 on the conversion of the eunuch. The conversion of Saul of Tarsus, Acts 9, 1 through 43. Was Saul converted on the Damascus Road? No. Good for Saul. He was the only one who said no, unless I missed it. I know you didn't have to think about that. He wasn't converted until he got to the city, right? We'll talk about that. The conversion of the Gentiles in Acts 10 and Acts 11. The execution of James and Peter's imprisonment in chapter 12. The first missionary journey in Acts 13. Now within the missionary journeys, when we get through, we begin in Acts chapter 13 and then going all the way to Paul's voyage to Rome in Acts chapter 28. Within that, you're going to see other examples of conversion that I didn't specifically mention at this point on, but you know that they're recorded in Acts 16, 18, and 19. And so the first missionary journey in Acts 13, and that's specific examples that we have. Acts 13, 1 through 14, 28. The meeting at Jerusalem on a specific issue, which contains a small little epistle in the book of Acts all its own. Acts 15, the entire chapter. Second missionary journey, Acts 15, 36 through 18, 22. Third missionary journey, 18, 23 through 21, 14. And you'll get all this. I'll put it in the outline so you don't have to worry about writing it down. Paul at Jerusalem. Remember, he appealed unto Caesar. Acts 21, and the events before that, Acts 21, 15 through 26, 32. And then his journey to Rome, 27, 1 through 28, and then verse 31. Much, much material can be recorded in those 28 chapters. Anybody want to add anything to either of those outlines or make a comment about those outlines? How soon after the resurrection of Jesus, after he was crucified and put in the grave for 3 days and came forth on what day of the week? First day of the week. How soon do we have the events in the book of Acts? Or how soon was the book of Acts penned? Jesus was assembled together with them for some 40 days, speaking concerning things pertaining to the kingdom of heaven. If the church was established roughly 33 A.D., Jesus was 30 years old when he was baptized with John. He observed three Passovers that are specifically recorded in the Gospels, and that's the yearly feast of Old Testament Jews. That would have been 3 years, so it's 33 years, and then he was crucified. Then he was raised from the dead with them for about 40 days, speaking of those things, and ascended to heaven. Then he told them to go back to the city of Jerusalem and wait until they'd be endued with power from on high, which was on what day? First day of the week. How do we know it was the first? We'll get into that when we get to Acts chapter 2. Specifically, he mentions in Acts chapter 2, verse 1, that it was what day? The day of Pentecost. 50 days later, they received the baptism of the Holy Spirit. But as the letter writes up, and I'm not one that is big on dates, but if we can have, and there are things within the book of Acts that we can nail down pretty certain concerning when you look at history. When you read about Aquila and Priscilla, who was left Rome because Paulus had commanded that all Jews depart from Rome. Well, when did he reign? That kind of gives us an idea as to when those things in the book of Acts were penned. And we'll look at that when we get that chapter. But nonetheless, if the book of Acts was written about 58 to 60 A.D., that gives you an idea of when the book was written, though the events back up to when? When Jesus was resurrected and was assembled with the apostles before he ascended into heaven. Acts chapter 1, verse 1. We won't get far. We've got less than 10 minutes. The former treatise have I made, O Theophilus, of all that Jesus began both to do and to teach, until the day in which he was taken up. After that, he, through the Holy Spirit, gave commandments to the apostles whom he had chosen. So we have Acts chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. And so in this very first one, if someone says, who wrote the book of Acts? What would you say? So I saw one person that said Luke. Is that what you would say? All right. Typically, the credit as to who wrote the book is given to Luke. And some say, well, here's some pretty strong internal evidence and the personal pronouns of we and so forth, and they'll look strongly at Acts chapter 1 and in verse 1 when the statement is made, the former treatise have I made. Well, that in and of itself doesn't tell us a lot until you see a specific person as to whom he's writing. And that specific person is who? Theophilus. Now, for those that are taking note, I'll put my spell check on. If I misspell, then you just make a correction. You won't even let me know about it. And so, they'll look at this and say, okay, the former treatise have I made, O Theophilus. And they'll say, okay, Theophilus is mentioned back in the book of Luke, which is attributed to Luke. Usually accepted that Luke wrote the book that bears his name. In the title. But in the book of Luke, say, okay, so Theophilus is mentioned in the book of Luke, and that's right. And so they would say, okay, so Theophilus is mentioned in Luke, and here the writer refers to a former treatise, which I have written to Theophilus. And so therefore it must be Luke that is writing the book of Acts. Okay. I will tell you this, as with any book of the Bible, if we don't know for certain, such as the book of Hebrews, who wrote the book of Hebrews, whether it was the Apostle Paul or someone else, doesn't take away from what we can glean from the book itself. So don't get caught up on who wrote the book, who wrote the book. Many times it's stated in the books of the Bible who wrote the book. I, John. I, Paul. James. Jude. But if not, don't worry about it. Just study the book. But here's a couple of the reasons as to why folks would say that Luke indeed wrote the book. The former treatise have I made, O Theophilus, of all that Jesus began to do. And so he tells us about even what was in the former treatise that he had wrote. What was in it? Of all that Jesus began both to do and to teach until the day in which he was taken up. And so when you come back to the book of Luke, I want you to notice Luke chapter 1 and then verse 1 begins. He says, "For as much as many have taken in hand to set forth in order," and that ought to impress us, because when we're going to look at Luke's account, we're going to look at a chronological book, as the Gospels are, of these things. "But many have taken in hand to set forth in order a declaration of those things which are most surely believed among us." So others wrote about those things which are, and they wrote in order of the things which are most surely believed among us, even as they delivered them unto us, which from the beginning were eyewitnesses and ministers of the word. "It seemed good to me also, having had perfect understanding of all things from the very first, to write unto thee in order." So Luke's going to write in order. It's a chronological order of the things that Jesus said, "to write unto thee in order, most excellent," there's that name, "most excellent Theophilus." Well, Luke, why would you be writing these things in order of the things which are most surely believed among them, that is written by other people, and you want to write to Theophilus that thou mightest know? And here's the reason. Why? "That thou mightest know the certainty of those things wherein thou hast been instructed." We talk about many times the four accounts of the one gospel, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and the purpose as to those writings. What's the purpose? The overall purpose of them, summed up really in John 20, 30, and 31. That we might believe. And Luke's saying, "I'm writing unto thee in order, almost excellent Theophilus, that thou mightest know the certainty of the things wherein thou hast been instructed." Now, someone may say, okay, the book of Acts, the book of Luke, is just written to all God's people, just in general, not to a specific person, because of the name Theophilus, which literally means a lover of God. You can see the variation of that word, and then a variation of the word, well, love, and then God, a God lover, one who loves God. But I don't think so. I don't think the text will allow that because of Luke chapter 1. Notice what he says again, is to just make that point. "It seemed good to me also, having had perfect understanding of the things which from the very first write unto thee, in order, most excellent Theophilus, that thou mightest know the certainty of those things wherein thou hast been instructed. But be that as it may, the former treatise ever made, of all the things that Jesus began both to do and to teach until he was taken up." And so you have those things recorded in Luke. And if you notice how Luke ends in Luke chapter 24 and then verse 51, "And it came to pass while he blessed them, he was parted from them and carried up into heaven." And so here's this, again, this, about 5 minutes, this reference to a former treatise of all that Jesus began both to do and to teach. And so if we went to the book of Luke, if that's what he's saying, I think that makes sense. Could we expect to see the things that Jesus began both to do and to teach until he ascended to heaven? In fact, we do in the book of Luke. And so not, be that as it may, the former treatise. Now, I want you to notice as well, what does treatise mean? Somebody uses a New King James Version. I think Bernice does. Maybe someone else. Do you still? Account. Okay. Account? The former account? New King James Version? Anyone else use a different version of the Bible than New King James and King James?
King James said book.
I'm sorry, say it again.
I said King James said book.
Acts chapter 1. And then verse 1, Bernice?
Yes.
What version are you using?
New
Yeah, so treatise, account, this word treatise, and I think this is interesting, it means account, it means word, the former word. In fact, if you look it up, the original Greek word, logos, which is a Greek word for word, is the word that is actually used. When you look at John chapter 1 and 1 and following, in the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. It's the same Word in the original. It means Word, the former Word, or treatise, or account, have I made. O Theophilus, of all that Jesus began both to do and to teach. And I'll point out this, I know I have in sermons, but it's something that probably, as long as my mental faculties are working properly, that I don't anticipate that I'll forget it. Of all that Jesus began both to do and teach. Jesus was a man of action. And he was a man of teaching. The master teacher himself. And it needs to be so in our life as we follow him as our great example. Maybe as we've got to sum up. May we always put the doing before the teaching. Paul said, as recorded in 1 Corinthians 9:27, that I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I preach to others, I myself would be a castaway. Some versions say disqualified. And so we need to practice what we preach. The Lord did. And we need to do that as well. I hope that you'll anticipate this study that we'll have on the book of Acts. I appreciate your good attention. I'll try not to forget to get you an outline as we covered in printed form for next class. If you have any questions, be sure to let me know. Thanks for your good attention.